All right, we'll get started here. Good evening, everyone. Welcome tonight. A short qualifying statement inserted here. That's what you get when you read. However, this evening's candidate forum is being sponsored by the Central Wisconsin Tea Party. And while a Tea Party does not endorse any one candidate, we do strive to provide information on all candidates. This evening's meant to provide you with some insight into those individuals who seek that to represent that 69th seat that Scott has vacated. And so with that, this is how the evening's going to proceed. Each candidate will start with a five-minute presentation of themselves, and during that time, they can receive questions from the audience within that time frame. And at the conclusion of the last presentation, it will be open Q&A period. You can ask questions of any of the candidates, and they've agreed to take questions. There are no prepared questions. They've not been provided with a list of acceptable questions. They've not been provided with anything other than an invitation to this tonight. So one thing I want you to remember, with your votes, with the election of people to represent you, they work for you. So keep that in mind when you formulate your questions. The people going to fill that seat are going to be doing an important job. So it's important that we, as their employers, so to speak, that we interview these people, okay? The order in which they'll speak, I'll tell you how that was processed. I assigned each one of them a number, give it to the computer, let the computer pick the random order. The order in which they speak will be Tom Dolan will speak first, Alana Fedwick Goodman will speak second, followed by Scott Noble, and finally with Robert Culp. Marshfield Public TV is taping this tonight. It's going to be viewed on a public channel. So as a courtesy, I ask you to keep the side conversations to absolute minimum if they're necessary at all. And at this time, let's everybody put our cell phones on silence or on vibrate, if you would, please. Okay? With that, there is no prepared bio on my part for each of the candidates, as normally would be heard, because each one of them are going to give their own bio. So at this point, David? We will at our meeting. Typically, this is a meeting night for the Central Wisconsin Tea Party membership meeting. This forum is a precursor to that meeting. And following the presentation tonight, there will be a short meeting of our membership. Okay? So with that, without any further to do, we'll start with Mr. Tom Dolan, our first presenter tonight. Tom?
Okay, good evening. My name is Tom Dolan. I'm a small business owner from Granton, Wisconsin, about 20 minutes down the road. I've been in business there now for 31 years. I've taken my business from a mom-and-pop organization up to I now have 7 full-time employees and 3 part-time. Okay, the name of my business is Tommy's Hilltop Bar and Grill. And because it is a bar and grill, I have belonged to the Tavern League of Wisconsin, which is the bar organization. I belonged to them now also for 31 years. For the past 20 years, I've served on their board of directors, and for the past 12 years, I've been in the capacity of their state treasurer. So I know how to balance budgets. I know how to work with money. I also know you don't spend it if you ain't got it. Okay, my personal life, I'm married to my wife, Nancy. We've been married over 20 years. Between us, we have 6 beautiful children. 13 grandchildren, so I got a pretty good family. What else do you need to know? What else do you want to know about me? I'm really open for anything. I've also done a lot of work, I should tell you, too. For 30 years, I worked with the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. So working with the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, we have built 2 handicap piers, one at Lake Sherwood and one at Lake Arbutus. We have sent probably 80 to 100 kids we sent to summer camp over the past 20 years. We do lots of good work. We do lots of fundraising. We stock ponds for the sportsmen. Anybody wants to know how I feel about the Second Amendment, that should tell you right there how I feel about it. Is there any other questions? Any questions anybody wants to ask of me? Because that's what we're here for. Why I'm running. I am running because I want to represent the common people, the business people, the farmers. I want to represent these people in central, you know, everybody in central Wisconsin. I want to make central Wisconsin a place to live, a place that will grow. I'm very, very passionate about that. I want to do whatever I can and do whatever I can when I'm in Madison to make this area much better. Well, number one, I never said I was a better candidate than any of the candidates. But why you should vote for me? Because I'm a common guy. I'm a small business owner. I know how to run things. I know how to get things done. And I'm sure they're all going to tell you the same. But I've done it. Yes, sir. All right. In the past, well, I'm always down in the Capitol. I'm always talking with the legislators down there. Being that I'm a member of the Tavern League, like I said, we held our meetings right across the street at the Inn on the Park. And when there's an issue, we go right over to the Capitol and we talk to our people there. So I'm in there a lot. I mean, I've met so many of the legislators. You know, I know these guys. I've been to many fundraisers. I helped out Jerry Petrowski over in the next district. I've helped out Amy Sue on the other side. We did a thing for her when she was running. I've helped out legislators in the past. Have I run for any other office? Yes, 22 years ago. I ran for the same position, but back then I wasn't really in politics. My mother-in-law, which was Rose Chubb, she was the retiring clerk in Clark County, and she said, "Come on, you're going to be the only one on the ticket. Why don't you run?" And I said, "Rose, I'm going to run. I'm going to run as an independent." She said, "No, you're not." She was a very stout Democrat. She said, "You're going to run as a Democrat." I said, "Whatever." She did all the paperwork for me. She did everything for me. She got my name out there along with 10 other people. And I didn't really follow through on it. She was not too happy with me. Okay, they're cutting me off. Gotta go.
Do save your question because there is a question and answer period at the end. So we don't think we have your last shot. Okay, Lana, next please.
Hello. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Alana Fettick. I have a small business here in Marshfield that I've had since 2003 for the last 10 years. I have been on the city council also serving the 2nd District, Wards 2 and 22, in the city of Marshfield. And as I said, I've done that for the last 9 years. And that has been such an amazing experience for me. I have loved every minute of being on the city council. I have always thought, though, that a new and exciting challenge awaited me. And when Scott Suter retired or resigned, I thought, what an amazing opportunity. I was then encouraged by various people, including business owners and my family, to run for the 69th Assembly District. And so I jumped in the race, excited about the field of candidates, because you, as the people of the 69th Assembly District, get the chance to not only find out about us, find out about what we believe, but also have the chance to cast your vote, which is one of the most important, I believe, rights we have as an American people, is to cast our vote. When I found that I could not only help the citizens of Marshfield, but also help people on a bigger scale in order to make a difference for the 69th Assembly District, I again, excited about that. I have never been a person on the city council, if you follow Marshfield City Council at all, to be a good old boy, to be a yes vote, ever. I have always voted what I believe is correct. My conservative principles, my fiscally conservative principles, my Christian principles, that is what drives me to be the Republican that I am and the voter on the city council that I am. I believe that it is very important to make Wisconsin, and specifically the 69th Assembly District, a place that we can be proud of. For my little boy, for the children of the 69th Assembly District, for the adults, for the workers, for the manufacturers, for the farmers, for everyone in the 69th Assembly District, it is vital that we make Central Wisconsin a place that we can be proud to call home. We have so many young professionals. We have so many people leaving the area. They get their education here. They're raised with good morals, with good values. They go off, they get a job, they find their life someplace else away from Central Wisconsin, and what a loss we have. And what a loss we have of really good, quality, well-paying jobs. And that's something that needs to be a priority for the 69th Assembly District. I, as I said, have never been one to be a yes vote on the council. I, in fact, am probably known the most for being a no vote, for being the most fiscally conservative, for being the most conservative in general. And I am glad I'm not a rubber stamp. I'm glad I have that integrity. And that's the integrity, wow, really, 1 minute already? And that's the integrity that I would bring to the state assembly as well. I would bring the integrity of not, this is how you have to vote, this is what you have to do, this is how it's going to be played. Because I'm not that kind of person. I have integrity. I vote according to my principles, the Second Amendment, pro-life, all the other things that I believe that we need to vote for as Americans, as workers. So thank you very much for your time, and I'm so glad you all are here. What a wonderful turnout.
Okay, hello. For some of you that don't know me, I know most of you do. I've been a member of the Tea Party for quite some time. I was a former vice chairman. But for those of you that don't know me, I'm Scott Kenneth Noble, and my occupation, I'm a special education teacher, EBD, emotional behavioral disability. I think the questions that were asked of the first candidate, I thought I would just kind of, why am I running? Well, I think we probably know in the Tea Party why we're all here is the overreaches of the federal government and how it comes into play in the state. Good examples. I think somebody said something about smart meters. Well, smart growth is something that is not just important in the Marshfield area, but way all throughout the 69th Assembly District. In Clark County, there was a referendum on smart growth, and over 70% said no. They didn't want smart growth. They think it's dumb. So that's another example of a federal overreach. I just heard on the radio this morning driving to work that 42% of Americans support Obamacare, or the Affordable Health Act, as it's more specifically known as. It's anything but affordable. So what we need to do at the state level is do everything we can to stop it, to block it, to make it the exchanges, anything that we can do at the state level, we can stop it, because 42% are the only ones that are supporting it. Even people that prior had supported it are now finding out that it's killing jobs. We don't have anything close to a full-time job anymore. Most of the businesses I'm talking to are trying to keep the jobs under 30 hours, because otherwise they're going to have to deal with Obamacare. Another issue, and I got the chance to see your new vice chairman talk about the Common Core State Standards. And in a nutshell, if you don't know what it is, it's just federal takeover of our schools. And I want to stop that. I don't want to have the federal government telling us how to teach children in the school district or Marshall or any school district in the 69th Assembly District. It's not an issue of left or right. It's an issue of right or wrong. And I guess when I say freedom is a noble pursuit, that's what I'm talking about. It's not just an empty platitude or rhetoric. I mean that when I talk about these specific issues. That's why I'm really excited that we have so many candidates. I can tell you the other side of the aisle is probably not going to have a primary. They'll probably have it all decided in a smoke-filled room. They'll have their own primary. I'm glad that we as conservatives are able to debate, you know, that we can disagree. That's what we are. We're individuals. We're for individual liberty and freedom and the Constitution. So what better way than to have these four, I think, really good candidates bring about the issues that so many in this room are concerned with and so many in MCTV cable land are interested in. So it's a pleasure to be here. I don't assume that I'm your candidate. I know I've been around here for a long time, so I would just ask you that you give everybody a fair chance tonight to discuss the issues, and I hope that in the end you'll see that I'm the one that's going to take your issues to Madison. And I thank you for your support and your listening ear this evening. Okay, well, I can take a question because I was trying to leave a little minute there. So, anybody got a question for me? Mr. Bender.
Scott, can you explain your political experience background?
Okay, that's a good question, Tom. I was a council member back in 08, so I've been on the city council. I voted along with Alana against the budget that year. So I guess you could say a fiscal conservative. I'm not in favor of increased borrowing and spending. I mean, sometimes you can lower taxes, and the city council has kept taxes in check, but the problem is you do it on the backs of the taxpayer eventually by borrowing and spending. And, you know, we've done some good things in the state, but there's still things we can do better because, I mean, this current biennial budget is $5.5 billion debt. And so while we keep taxes down, we've also got to try to decrease spending and decrease borrowing. And I've done that at this council level, so that's probably a political experience. I was also a 2012 Republican nominee for state senate. I ran against probably one of your favorite senators, Julie Lassa. So I've been at it a while, and I'm pretty familiar with the issues. And I'm – okay, I guess it's cutoff time. So we'll have chances to talk, so I look forward to more of your questions. Thank you.
Good evening. It's good to see this many folks out, concerned citizens that care about the future of the country. And it's also good to have good candidates. I'll echo what Scott said, that I think there's a good field of candidates out. I'm used to talking to a group like this about roofing or any one of the ventures that I've been involved in. Not so accustomed to politics. This is my first run at political office. Been very involved in the political scene for many years in a lot of different ways. But first off, and really for me, it would be more asking about you rather than me. I'm very uncomfortable standing up here talking about myself for 5 minutes. It just is not really my nature. But in any case, just a little bit about myself. My wife, Laura, and youngest daughter, Tiki, are here. Laura is a tutor for special needs kids. She understands a lot of issues with regards to that. I've got one of my daughters here, but I have five daughters and two sons total, so it's a big family. Two of my daughters are in Taiwan teaching English. They have master's degrees in teaching. I've got another one who is over there in an orphanage for 6 months. When I started in life, well, that would have been way, way back. But when I started in my business life 28 years ago, I got married the same month as I started Culps of Stratford, the roofing company that many of you have seen around. I really actually felt called to the ministry, to be a preacher of the gospel. And a wise mentor at my church told me at that point, Bob, that's really not what this area needs is more preachers. What we need is, and if you remember, this is the mid-80s when jobs were leaving the area, people were going to the big cities. He said, what this area needs is people to start businesses and employ people at good wages. And I really took that as my mantle and my calling in life. And I've been successful in doing that. We have 45 people working at our company. There's a lot of lives and mouths that depend on me. I guess if you were to describe me in any particular way, it would be a sense of duty. I've always had duty about everything I've done and jumped into. Like I say, this is my first political run, and so I'm a little bit uncomfortable in going around and getting signatures. We have the signatures. I'm a little bit uncomfortable about putting up political signs or about talking about myself. But we have actually had the experience of testifying on Capitol Hill on behalf of the National Roofing Contractors Association. I'm vice president of that organization. I've been in Madison for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce Business Day countless times with Centergy. I know a lot of the legislators in Madison very well, and a lot more in Washington very well. The challenge that I have particularly, and I'll just expose my soft underbelly, if you will, is I don't know so much about local politics when it comes to towns and cities. Scott and Alana have the edge on me with regards to that. But I do learn fast. I work hard. I listen well. And that would be my intention going to the Capitol, is to have forums to really talk about what's impeding our lives. Doesn't matter what the issue is, because there are so many. And I could get carried away with rabbit trails talking about the issues. One of my passions, of course, is business. And I see the regulations. Some of them don't make any sense at all. Others are fairly sensible. I would intend to hold forums in the area that would draw out what is impeding the progress and the freedom of this district and of really the entire state. Because there are problems to solve, and you need somebody there that knows how to solve problems. And I'm not suggesting I'm better than any of the others here, but government, you might as well say, equals problem, okay? You need to have someone there that is a little bit not scared to say, hey, this isn't the correct way to do this. There are better ways, because we're Americans. We think big. We, you know, drive big trucks. The state and the federal government want to kind of put us into a conservation mode, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm only saying that we are Americans. We are people from Wisconsin. We dream. And I want to help to fulfill those dreams. Any questions? I think I have room for one before I get that. I think they said there's a trap door underneath me here. So, go ahead, Dennis.
What are the most important issues?
Oh, where do I start? There are a number of issues. Coming from a family with educators, education is incredibly important to me. And the ability for people to choose, parents and children to choose where they go, and opportunity scholarships and the like. This is a very near and dear thing to my heart. Also, just the plethora of regulations that are there are of concern to me, many of which don't make sense, as I said. Other questions? Oh, she's cutting me off. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I do want to open up the floor to questions of any one of the candidates. And please, I know there is a plethora, don't you love that word? A plethora of questions. I'm glad you guys heard that, because okay, perfect. Question over here. Could I ask you to stand, please, so we can all hear better? And who are you addressing it to? Okay. Who wants to jump first?
Should we go up there, or should we? Or is it like a parade up here? Can we all like come up here and talk or something?
That would be better. Please, I mean, use a microphone,
come on, guys.
So that it can be recorded.
Why not, right? May as well. We can like lean in when it's our turn or something.
repeat the question. What are the three most important issues in the 69th Assembly District, at least for us as individual candidates? Because I'm sure for every person it's different. For me, it's certainly keeping taxes low. Clark County specifically, which is a large part of the 69th Assembly District, is one of the, at least from my understanding, one of the poorest counties, and yet one of the highest taxed counties. And so because of that, I think taxes, keeping taxes low, I've been able to do that on the city council for 10 years, and I think it's not about revenue, it's about spending. Governments don't make money. Governments spend our money that we make. Nonetheless, taxes are one of my big issues. Number two is to create strong, well-paying jobs for our workers. I think creating a climate that brings businesses, that fosters businesses, that encourages businesses to expand and hire is absolutely vital to this area and this district. And without it, we will not be successful as a district. And third is really government reform. It is, as I said in my first comment about cutting taxes, it really is a spending problem. It really is a spending problem. It is time we start looking at fraud and waste and reform government. We've been able to do that on the city council. We've been able to reduce some positions, thereby eliminating those. I think we can do more. I think we can do better as a city, and I think we can do more and better definitely as a government. So those are my three issues.
Well, I think that's obvious to say we want to keep taxes low. I mean, that's what we're here for, right? Tax enough already? I think I'll just move on to three initiatives that I think the Tea Party is focused on right now. First would be education, Common Core State Standards. Anybody here ever heard of that? Almost everybody. So we're all telling all our friends what it's about. One thing I want to do with this campaign is not only advocate, but educate. You know, sometimes when you're telling somebody about Common Core, they're like, what is that? Well, I'll say it in a nutshell. I want to stop the federal overreaches in our local schools. We want to save our children. I mean, we've heard the thing, it's for the kids, right? What's more for the kids than to have local control and not have regionally, culturally, socially, religiously biased, politically biased curriculum? I want to stop that. You've probably seen the shirt, Stop Common Core. Well, I have to teach Common Core as a teacher until you guys put somebody in there that's going to stop it. And right now we have probably the best opportunity that we'll ever have. We've got a Republican governor. We've got a Republican senator. Many of them I know very well. You know, I can call. We have a Republican assembly. So if we get somebody in there that wants to fight for that issue, we can get up or down vote on it. And I think that this is an opportunity. And this may not even be a Republican issue. I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I don't think it's left or right issue. It's about right or wrong. It's wrong for our kids. It's wrong for all of us. So that's a big one. Smart growth. I know another big initiative that the Tea Party, I was up at the Loyal parade and I saw the Tea Party float and it said, Stop Agenda 21. What's that? Not a lot of people know. Well, I think probably the most people know is some of the different tentacles of it. It's a UN resolution. I teach it in one of my science classes that what had happened in 1992. But it comes in a lot of different forms. And the one form I've been talking most about is something that comes in the local government. And it's called smart growth. They're probably going to come to your house at some point in Marshfield and put on a smart meter. And I don't really like that. I don't like to have the federal government trying to tell us what to do with our property. I mean, I think most of us are for property rights. So we got to push back against smart growth and smart meters and just the whole idea of having a planned regionalization of our cities, our towns. And I think that will benefit us in being a rural and agricultural area. I think the last one, I won't go into, I mean, we'll probably get to talk more about, I'm hoping there's going to be a lot of questions about Common Core and about smart growth. I mentioned Obamacare in the beginning. I think that's probably the most important one and would tie in with all the other things. It's a job killer. When we have jobs that are 29 or 30 hours and there's no such thing as a full-time job, how are we going to create jobs? Those aren't even jobs. They're part-time. And there's all these privacy concerns. I mean, I was listening to it on the radio this morning when they were talking about Obamacare's support that's dropping. And this is on WPR. That's probably not a, you know, it's not a most conservative outlet there is, but the guy was on there and he was talking in favor of it. He says, but there are some concerns. The privacy concerns are not, the safeguards are not in place. We're nowhere near having Obamacare right now because privacy of our healthcare information is of the utmost importance to me and all of you. We don't want to have access to that without the proper safeguards in place. So at the minimum, what we want to do is delay it. But I think that once we delay it, we're going to find out we don't want it. And then hopefully I'll be in the assembly to stop it. Thank you.
Already mentioned that education is very important to me. And I think the reason why that's so important to me is because if you put a strict set of standards, or not a strict set, actually a relaxed set of norms in place and teach our kids that, you take away their dignity and the dignity of their parents and their initiative, you sap that. And to me, that's one of the dozens of reasons why education standards are not something that I have any affinity or liking for, and I will fight to fix that and to get that stopped to the best of my ability. The other thing that's real important to me is property rights. My first ancestors came to this country in 1685, and they were some of the first people that built homes in Pennsylvania at that point. They carved their living out of the wilderness, bought often large tracts of land, really worked together very well with the native people. It wasn't until after that that some of the conflicts started. But they came to America because they had the concept of property ownership deep in their hearts and deep in their souls. And they had the idea of the freedom to worship. That's why they came to this country. Some of my ancestors had had eight of my direct ancestors who were killed in Switzerland for their beliefs. And they fled that tyranny to what we have here. And we're kind of letting that slip away. That concerns me. I'll do what I can to make sure that individual right to property and property ownership is withheld. After all, that's part of the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The other thing that really is maybe more important to me as an employer than it is to you, but to give you, those of you who aren't employers, I should say, but to give you just an insight into the employment equation. We have a, 8% unemployment rate in Central Wisconsin, and yet when we go out to hire workers at our company and we provide them with health care and we provide them with benefits and we provide them with all of these, they're living wage jobs. But the issue that we have is we're often competing with the state and federal government for employees. Now, you think that's a little bit crazy, but really that's the truth of it. It pays almost as much to sit at home on the couch as it does to come to work and roof or be involved in a business of another sort. So when you hear an unemployment rate of 8%, that concerns me. But the reason it concerns me most is because the free economy, the real economy, is competing with that thing called government. And that's a problem for me.
Okay. So,
I'm retired from the Army. All the time I was in the service, they said, this is for your freedom. Now, after I got out, I found out they have another Army here taking their way. And I read the paper not too long ago. That's the living of 3.1%. The Department of Transportation wants 16%.
Give your three issues.
Jump on that.
Okay, three issues that are important to me. Okay, number one, I live in Clark County, which was alluded to as being one of the highest taxed areas, and we are. I know it. What do we do about it? We give incentives maybe to small business owners, to farmers, to, hey, take that guy off unemployment. Come on and give him a job, and maybe we'll give you some kind of a tax break. I know they had a program like that. I don't know if they still do. I never qualified for it, I don't believe, because I didn't take people off unemployment. I just took people off the street that came in looking for work. As far as unemployment being at 8%, I don't believe that's not a factual number. That means there's 8% of the people on unemployment. There's more than that probably laid off, probably don't have a job. They don't qualify for unemployment anymore. So that's one of my issues. Agriculture has got to be another issue. Agricultural and I drove around this entire district. Other than cities like Marshfield, Stratford, Abbotsford, Neillsville, Owen, this is an agricultural area. And when the farmers are doing very good, the businesses also do good. So I think any help that the government can give the farmers isn't going to hurt one bit. I think it'll keep the economy moving. Okay, then there's Obamacare. A lot of people talk about Obamacare and how it affects people, and they don't even know the results of Obamacare yet. I've already seen the effects of some of the Obamacare. Like I said, I'm in the restaurant and tavern industry, and I would do food deliveries. I would do them over to some of the businesses in Neillsville. And I watched that go from a very good day for me. We would cook all morning, get food delivered to the factories over there, and that's gone. Because those factories now cut out the full-time jobs and hired all part-time people. They're trying to get under the wire on the Obamacare. Okay, so I don't like Obamacare. Try to help out Ag, try to help out the taxes over in Clark County. And that's about it. That's what I'm focusing on.
I would like to address the gentleman's question about the taxes and the percentage of tax. First, sir, I'd like to thank you for your service. Thank you very much. I think he would like to hear what your position is on taxes in personally opposed.
All right, we'll start again. Also, sir, thank you for your service and for being involved, because far too many people overlook that kind of stuff. Far too many people overlook information that should be not only used, but should be gathered, disseminated to their friends, and used to vote. And so you're absolutely right. The state does nothing. And as I said before in my remarks, it's a spending problem. It's not a revenue problem. It's not how much more can I get out of you tax-paying dolts who all you do is out of your wages every week or 2 weeks is pay more money to both the state and federal government. It's about making sure that we can not only cut the waste and find out why these departments are asking for these increases when the cost of living is a 3% raise, and I don't know, but I didn't get a 3% raise this last year. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'll bet the normal worker did not get that kind of cost of living raise. And it is a spending problem, and it absolutely needs to be addressed. It is an issue that I think even Mr. Noble talked about, where the state the state says that we are going to continue to increase property taxes, which needs to be addressed too. Are our property taxes not too high? I mean, even in the city of Marshfield, our taxes are too high, and that's only one of five. We have the state. We have the technical schools. We have the colleges. We have our counties. Too much already. Too many real estate taxes. That really needs to be addressed. And I think it can't be done on the back of fees either. So we're not going to cut your taxes, y'all, but we're going to raise your fees. So it's going to cost you more when it goes to register your car, and it's going to cost you more when you go to do this, and it's going to cost you more when you go to get a hunting license to hunt a deer that's going to feed your family. Seriously? Enough already. And I know the tea party is taxed enough already, and my kid really thought it was a tea party. He thought it was going to come and drink tea. But how cute is that? Nonetheless, seriously, we are taxed far too much, and that's something that absolutely needs to be addressed. And regardless of which of us get in or whoever gets elected, we're going to be a freshman. We're not going to have Scott Studer's ability to be in a majority. We're going to have to work that much harder, and that's exciting. That's exciting because we can say and we can be that that woman who goes to the judge and fights and fights and fights and fights and fights until she gets what she wants. Well, for me anyway. Thank you.
Well, first off, I'd like to thank Mr. Weitschegger for his service, and I'd just like to say one thing about service that it just, I think, ties in. As you're talking about the growth of government, I mean, there's because of all these departments that you mentioned, Frank, it makes it harder and harder for us to keep our promises to veterans. I mean, there's only certain things the government should be doing, and we keep on increasing and increasing the size of the government. I think it was Reagan that said, you know, government's not the solution to our problem. You know, government is the problem. Well, that's a good point to what Mr. Breitschreger's talking about. So I know on our website we have one thing, helping veterans. You know, they fought for our freedom. And if I'm sent to Madison, I'm going to fight for those guys and those gals that fought for our freedom. And I think the only way to keep our promises to veterans is to have this government do what it's supposed to do, not keep adding and growing through borrowing, spending. Even in the, you know, we've done made a lot of great strides with the state budget, but there's also areas where we can, I think, do a little better. We had $1.9 billion in new spending. That means it wasn't there in the last budget, and it's there now. So I think that's probably what you're talking about, Frank, is we got $1.9 billion of new spending, $5.5 billion in debt. You know, sure, we're keeping taxes stabilized, but I think that's what the issue I was speaking to, like with the Marshfield City Council. You can go a decade and not raise taxes, but if you're borrowing your way to do that, are you really ultimately saving any tax money? I mean, ultimately, we're going to be taxed enough already. And I think most of us feel we are right now. So I think we got to look at the role of government and also keep in mind that it's not necessarily the solution, but it's a problem. And that if we get rid of these overreaches, because a lot of times the problem with doing some of the things I've outlined is there's usually some federal money attached to it. And in the state, there's a lot of politicians, Republican, Democrat, independent, otherwise, that have a hard time turning down something that they said, if you don't take it, and I've heard this at the city council level too, if you don't take it, somebody else is going to get it. We have to get out of that premise and start getting back to our principles. I mean, if we attach a bunch of money from the federal government and we have to do something that's wrong for us, and it's going to cost us more money, Obamacare, I mean, that's going to raise taxes. The IRS is expanding already. So I think that the issues that Frank brought up, all those different numbers, if you break it down, we're just doing too much of everything. And what we got to get back to is keep our promises to the veterans, keep our promises to our Constitution and what we should have as a government role in our lives. So I'm all for lowering taxes and lowering spending. I think that's probably a moot point. I mean, If you want to get the most fiscally conservative person in office, I think that's probably me. I wouldn't say that that's the only reason to vote for somebody, but if indeed you feel we're taxed enough already, I would like your vote so that I can make sure that we're not taxed anymore. Thank you.
I have certainly paid lots and lots of taxes over the years, but first off, again, sir, thanks for your question and your service. I appreciate that. What you tax, you stifle. What you take taxes away from or lower the tax rate on, you encourage. I know that we can't fix at the state level what ought to be fixed at the federal level, but it just makes me, it causes me a big deal of concern when on the federal level, for instance, you raise tax rates by either not renewing things like the Social Security tax went away earlier this year. But the on the state, I think we're doing some things well. On the other hand, we've got a long way to go. And as far as balancing, not spending more than you take in, and watching and not thinking that increasing the tax rate will give you more money. It has exactly the opposite effect throughout history, if you look at it. One of the craziest things about a progressive tax rate is I heard on the news yesterday that on the federal level, that the top 1% of income earners, income disparity is actually greater than it was 5 years ago, which is simply an indicator that we're not thinking correctly when it comes to setting tax rates. There's no doubt we have to have taxes because there are things that we as Americans have come to depend on, and there are things that are constitutionally mandated by the federal government and the state government that need to be done. But to have this thing of taxing income and saying, okay, let's just take it up so we've got more money to spend on the state level, doesn't work. And if I'm in Madison, I will certainly work to make sure that we are fiscally responsible, that we watch every penny. That's another way of saying fraud and abuse, and I appreciate that, but that we watch every penny and that we make sure that it's spent well.
Yes, I also would like to thank you for your years of service. I have a son who just put in his 20 years and just got out after doing four tours overseas, two to Somalia and also two to Iraq. So I know where you're coming from. Okay. Taxes, my favorite thing. I'm taxed pretty heavily over in Clark County, and when I went to the board of review and I complained about, I said, how come my taxes? I said, I'm not a big supper club like the one down the road. I'm not this. How come I'm paying more in taxes than they are? And the tax lady said to me, his women's bathroom just need to be painted. That was the answer I got. I didn't really care for that. Okay, so taxes. Going to Madison and representing you, you can only try to keep the taxes down. We're not miracle workers, not one of us. Right now, the governor we have has lowered the taxes. We talked to our tax people now this year. They did say that our taxes would be going down. User fees, though, are always on the rise. It used to cost me $32 to register my truck. Now it's, I think, $84 or $86. Whoever got a truck knows. Yeah, it's user fees that they're nailing us on. And a lot of those user fees not only comes from the DNR, they come from the Department of Transportation. Where else do they come from? I don't know, but it's user fees. And we've got to control those user fees. But we all got to control taxes. We got to watch the tax base. Yeah, thank you.
Hearing that this budget, the state budget, lowered taxes, well, but it raised spending.
And, you know, I appreciate the question. Would we be cutting spending and what to the state government? And I honestly don't have a copy of the state budget. I'm new to political office. This has really jumped on me fairly quickly. I do look at budgets at my company all the time. And we take a look at every line item. Whether one assembly person can actually do that is a difficult thing, because there's a sense in which you're one of 99 frogs in a wheelbarrow down there. But there is also a sense in which, whether it's in D.C. or in Madison, I think the same thing applies. You have you can go there on principle, but if you want to rise in power within the assembly, often you have to trade off principle. And if you want to, so they're opposite sides of the scales, if you will. What I know is that I can go down there because my roots run deep in the community here, and I have a whole life outside of the political spectrum. I've been running a business for 28 years. I will continue to run the business. I am not going to trade principle for power, and I'll look at everything as tightly as I can. I wish I had the facts and data in front of me. I don't, but I look at budgets all the time, and I certainly would make sure that that things are taken care of there.
And I also certainly haven't read the how many page budget, but I do know that, is including on the city council, when you keep taxes the same or decrease taxes, and when you increase spending and borrowing and or borrowing, that's not conservative, and that's not saving money, and that's not, in the long run, helping the taxpayer. In fact, it's hurting us, because it's putting the burden, just like the federal government is doing, because we see this all the time, they're putting the burden on our children. Really? Is that really appropriate for any of us to say, oh, you know what, we'll get to it later, or we'll find the money later, or we'll do that later? That's, and I agree with Mr. Culp, that's not integrity. I used the word integrity before, and I use it again. It's not integrity. I believe that you cannot trade. You cannot trade your principles. You cannot trade what's best for the 69th Assembly District for power. You can't do it. I think one of the other candidates had indicated that you can't trade the almighty dollar for a vote. You can't do that. That's not right.
Okay, the question, I believe, was what are you going to do about the state budget, correct? Okay, you've got me at a loss as well, because I have not seen the state budget, so it's going to be pretty hard for me to comment on where I cut the state budget. I do agree, though, you do not trade your principles. That's all I can say. Until I see the state budget, I won't know where to even start to cut it.
Well, I appreciate your question. I would say a good place to start would be the $1.9 billion in new spending. That would be spending that wasn't in the 2010 budget that is now in this biennial budget. And at the end of it, I said before, we're going to have $5.5 billion in debt. So right off the top, if you don't increase the amount of new spending, you have a almost $2 billion you can cut right out of there. Also, if you talk in terms of just state jobs, there was 177,000 new jobs. And there were some jobs that were cut, but there were jobs that weren't filled, so they're kind of easier to cut. I mean, sometimes the problem with government is it's just really hard to do these things. It's just hard to, if you're one frog in a wheelbarrow, I think it's probably not the main point. You still have to bring it up. I'm not saying that we're going to go down there and get everything that I said tonight done, but we're going to try. And if we can stop all this government overreach and try to shrink the size of government, we're going to have a lot less to pay for, and the budget's going to come down. So I would say definitely cut out any new spending. There's also increased spending. We wouldn't have $5.5 billion of debt if it weren't total that much that we're spending. So I'd like to see us get back to just spending what we're taking in. And I know we want to keep taxes down, and I'm a big fan of that. I'm not going to raise taxes. I really want to lower taxes. But I think when you lower taxes and raise spending, you're really not being totally honest with the public. If we really mean we're taxed enough already, that means we should stop spending already. Stop borrowing already. We need to move this idea forward. And I mentioned some specific things that really are raising taxes. Obamacare. We can stop Obamacare at the state level. That's going to save a lot of tax money. As far as what numbers, I think it's going to also create jobs. Because right now it's a job killer because we're not being able to even have employers, you know, have a full-time job available. Though, if you're out of business right now, you're probably thinking, well, we could probably put on one or two at 29 or 30 hours. So that would be good. Also, when you increase the role of government, like in smart growth, you're stopping the family farm. You're stopping the small business. You're raising regulation. That's what smart growth is. It's regulation. If you're talking about lowering taxes, the first thing you got to do is lower regulations. I had talked to one business owner. He's got 48 different permits just to run basically a gas station. That is way too much of a problem. Why would anybody want to even get into business? So we need to lower regulation. We need to lower taxes. And how we do that is just start cutting out all this overspending. The $1.9 billion would be a good place to start.
It's an excellent question. Would I support legislation or, an amendment to limit terms? Absolutely, I would. In fact, I commit right here and now to self-term limit to no more than four myself, four and a half, that is. That would be just the max. And I take that from a friend of mine who's in the U.S. Congress who's told me that he's going to do the same thing. And he's a man of integrity, a man that I trust. And I think that when you get the political class that just stays there for the power that's associated with it, that's a real problem. The thing about going to Madison that is important, I think, for people to consider is there's a couple of ways to get the job done. And one of the things that I've done all my life is I've sold people things. And because of that, salespeople to some extent have a reputation. But I can sit down with somebody who is exactly on the other side of the fence, and I can work with them typically, not always, because sometimes you can't compromise principle, understand, but bring them to a point of at least understanding by winsomeness and carefully chosen words. And to me, that's what I would, again, commit to do. Not be wishy-washy, don't misunderstand. Have a core set of principles that won't be traded, but go down there and make a compelling case to people in ways they can understand. That's what I would commit to. And absolutely, that was a long-winded answer to a very short question. Would I support? Yes.
Would I support term limits of 12 years? Yes, I would. 12 years is plenty long. Although you got to realize, too, that our current guy that just retired out of that position was in there for 14 years. I don't know if you'd ever get legislation like that because all the legislators that are down there want to be in there so long that I don't know if you'd ever get something like that. But I would support it if I seen it because I don't plan on being in there 12 years.
I certainly am not a career politician, regardless of how long I've been on the city council. However, would I want to amend the Constitution of either the state of Wisconsin or the United States? I think our founding fathers were brilliant people. very brilliant people. I think there have obviously been some abuses. We had FDR in there for, good Lord, forever, changing the whole landscape of what we have now. I absolutely think that the Founding Fathers believed, and this is at least what I believe, that the Founding Fathers believed that we had a republic, not a democracy, a republic, that voted, that was involved. And so I believe terms, truthfully, should be self-limiting, not only personally, but also voter. You get to the polls, you vote, you either vote in the person you want or you vote out the person you want. Unfortunately, we have gotten to a point in America where you give me this, you give me unemployment, you give me, excuse my language, an Obama phone, and I'll vote for you. Sure, why not? Whatever you want to give me, I'll vote for you. And that's not the way our Founding Fathers intended it. They intended a republic. And I certainly agree with term limits, but I believe that amending the Constitution is a very, very serious thing and something that I only wish our government and our Supreme Court actually believed in the Constitution and actually followed the Constitution, because just by doing that, I think we would be fine. And I agree with Mr. Culp, though, about partisanship. Partisanship is such a problem. You hear it spoken from both sides, and yet you go down there, and nothing happens. It's the same old, same old. It's the same old bunch of cows following the leader. And that's not okay, and that's not integrity. Integrity is, I agree with Mr. Culp, being able to talk to the other side, being able to understand where they're coming from. One of my friends is a Democrat. Why is he a why is he my friend? Because I gained so much insight understanding where he's coming from. I don't agree with him. I don't follow his principles. I have my own principles, believing in the Second Amendment, believing in pro-life, believing in limited government. But you can't insulate yourself either. And just because they have a D behind their name doesn't mean you don't listen to them and doesn't mean you don't find common ground. Because we have to, or nothing will change. Nothing will change. And that is not okay. That's not okay for us. It's not okay for our future.
Well, as far as term limits, I think I've talked about it in the past, but 12 years would be 6 terms. That's a lot of terms to call a term limit. Yeah, I would support it, but I have a feeling that if I wrote a bill like that, that it wouldn't go anywhere. I think some of the things we need to do at even the more local level, you know, when you're talking about terms and having the political class, you have that at every level. It just doesn't happen just at the assembly or senate level, but it happens at the school board, the city council, the county board. I'd like to see, you know, these stupid spring elections get moved to November with the rest of them. Nobody even shows up hardly. It's like 15% is like a great day. So I do agree that term limits are elections, really. And what we could do is have a bill or a referendum to move them to the fall. So first off, you'd save a lot of money. You know, you wouldn't have all these unopposed races. And you might even elect a few more conservatives than you would in a spring election if you had it in the fall. So overall, I think term limits, that's a good idea. It would be a hard one to sell, but I would definitely, I pledge to write that. You know, if you want to do 6 terms, I might even be coerced into something lower. That's the other thing. I mean, that's part of the problem is we've got the same people that are being paid a good amount of money to be down there, and after a while it gets hard to leave. It shouldn't be a job. I mean, a job like going to work. I mean, it's really an honor and a privilege, and I would do it for nothing. I mean that. So, I mean, right now they make $49,900 a year. You know, that takes somebody in our part of the state here probably a lot of them 2 years to make that kind of money. So, I mean, I might even look at, you know, lowering that wage, too. So.
We had a couple of questions out here in the interest of time, right?
Well, we have covered the fiscal part of this issue. I'd like to ask a question on a social issue. Some years back, my wife and I were one of the driving forces of getting the amendment to the Wisconsin Constitution, basically on a government of the federal level, which is DOMA, of which marriage is considered to be
an excellent question. Where would I stand on DOMA? And you said it was a social question. Really, it is, but it's also an economic question. If you consider the fact that the history of our country and the one of the reasons that it has been so vibrant in terms of its economy is because of a stable family unit. The best way that I can, and I'm not suggesting that all others are unstable. Please understand what I'm saying here, but I can probably do it best in a real quick story, and unless they put term limits on the amount of time people have the microphone here, which could happen as well. But we had missionaries in at our church fellowship about a month ago that were talking about the Cuicatec Indians in Oaxaca, Mexico. And they are the happiest people. Cuicatec means the name of the song, or the people of the song. And, you know, one of the things that I asked at that point was, what is their family structure like? Is there a lot of broken homes? Are there a lot of issues with the Cuicatec? And the answer was no, absolutely not. And I think that's the reason they're the people of the song, and they're, although they are dirt poor, they have happiness. And if you were to put a little bit of a incentive in front of them or give them industry, they would excel. Contrast that to one of my brother-in-laws was on a reservation in the United States, and they were the exact opposite. Homes that were broken apart, people that were in disarray, and the economy in shambles. To me, it certainly is a social question, but it also is an economic question. And I think that the marriage of one man and one woman is the way it has been throughout history, and that's been proven to work in every society.
Yes, I also, the answer would be that I'm all for the family, not, I'm not a gay activist by any means whatsoever. I am a family man. I have 6 children and 13 grandchildren, and that's the way I like it.
When the issue first came out, I ended up debating a lesbian about the difference between the marriage amendment and not the marriage amendment. And at that time, I did a huge amount of research at that time, and I continue to believe the same as I do now. The definition of marriage must continue the way it is. Unfortunately, though, I think it's under attack, not only by the legislature, but also what the Supreme Court did. By reversing DOMA, or by limiting it, I imagine, they've actually really put restraints on every state government. And it's really, I think, up to us as citizens of Wisconsin to continue the fight. When it first came out, the citizens of Wisconsin were incredibly in favor of marriage being between one man and one woman. And I pray that that continues, because only with that citizen involvement in the definition of marriage is it going to continue. Marriage has always been defined as one man and one woman. Not only does it affect us on a happiness level, on a social level, on an economic issue, on an economic level, it also affects our children. And it is sad to see what is happening to our culture. And I think only, at least I believe, only if we continue with that definition of marriage will we stop hopefully seeing a slide, because we have children who don't even know what a family is with a dad and a mom, let alone anything else. And so it definitely needs to be challenged. It definitely needs to be fought for. But it takes not only legislators, regardless of which one of us is elected, it also takes citizens. So please, please, please fight for that. Please fight for the definition of marriage to remain intact, the cultural, the historical definition of marriage.
This is a good one. When I have ever talked to the different pro-family organizations throughout the state, like Wisconsin Family Action or some of the others, I've always given them the same answer that, you know, if we really want to pursue this religious freedom, this religious liberty, we need to get marriage out of the government control. I mean, that's just another example of the expansion of the government. I'm all for one man and one woman, but how much of the government do we want running this? And so that's one of the areas that I always get the endorsement from the pro-family organizations by telling them the really deep-rooted ideological problem is that the government intervention in our social systems, a marriage is between a man and a woman. I believe that with all my heart. But on the other hand, I also don't believe that having the government institute all this is lowering our taxes, keeping our government shrunk. At some point, we have to start looking real hard at what is the role of government and how many different things do we want the government to run at every level. This could be handled at your church. That's the kind of thing that I think is about what Central Wisconsin values would come forward with. And I guess I would support even if there was a referendum, to that end. And it's been done in different times at different states. And so I think we could find out a lot about the will of Wisconsin by doing that. So I just think we need to get the government out of our lives in that regard so that we can, follow our own social system, our own personal family, and even biblical decisions. That we have that religious freedom and that religious liberty, and I want to fight to protect that for you.
So the question is, how do we have any problem with the way public education is funded, and would we change it? Is that basically the question?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I do have a problem with the way education is funded. I absolutely believe in the voucher system, not the voucher system that's currently either proposed or instituted, because that is, not good at all. It's putting more government control right on the backs of what we're trying to get the government out of, and that's education. If we could bring education to a local level, if we could bring education to a level where the taxes I pay actually go to fund my child's education, what a concept that would be. What a concept that would be. And I know there are a lot of underprivileged people. I know there are people who can't afford it, and I certainly believe that. Well, on a religious note, if the church was the church, and if the church did what the church was supposed to do, and that is help the underprivileged, we really wouldn't have the government problem that we have today. But we do. Therefore, we have to find a way to hopefully succeed that problem back to the place where it was originally intended to be. And that's in the local hands. And hopefully, education will stop being so federally an issue, stop being so state an issue, and start being more local an issue. And I absolutely believe in the voucher system. I believe it needs to continue. My tax dollars should pay for my child's education, and your tax dollars should pay for your child's education or your grandchild's education.
As a father of two educators and a husband of an educator, as I said before, it's very important to me. And yes, I believe that opportunity scholarships should be there. Now, that's another way of saying voucher, if you will. But I think there's a sense in which it sounds better because you give parents and children. Ms. Fettig was right that you have down at the local level education control. I would take it down to the parent level. If you look at how our history was started, and one of my childhood heroes, Thomas Edison, in third grade was pulled out of the school by his mother because his teacher said that he was addled. I had to look up addled when I was 3 years old because I didn't understand it. But she literally said that she would take him out and educate him. We have Thomas Edison because of the ability to personalize education to that level. If you look at history, Department of Education was formed, back in the early 70s, I believe. Have test scores gone up, or have they gone down? Well, we know what the answer is to that. I'm not necessarily saying that one frog in a wheelbarrow of 99 in one state of 50 can change that, but if I could, I would. I think that our education system needs to have a radical shift. And I think that if it were to operate more like the real economy, read that, the private sector or the rest of us, it would make a lot of sense. You'd have competition for schools, and it would, the best would rise, and the lowest would come up to that. And I know that's kind of radical thought, but it is what I believe.
I do not know how you would change how you're going to fund public education. But if you mean, like, because I don't have any kids in school right now, I shouldn't have to pay all them taxes for the schools and the colleges and the tech school and everything? Well, I'd be all for that. But, no, I don't know how you would do it. I haven't seen a plan on how you would do it. I would support a plan if I thought it was worthy of supporting, but you'd have to show it to me. You know, that's an honest answer, because I don't believe you can I don't believe you're going to change it.
Well, I think it was Ronald Reagan in 1980 that got elected to get rid of the Department of Education. We can't do much about that, but we can certainly try to stop what No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, Common Core State Standards. I mean, all these different things that are coming down are not really going to help fund our education system. All it does is blow it up and make it more inefficient. Ultimately, everything is built around the standardized test. I mean, that's why we have these, the Marshfield School District calls it professional learning communities, which is, you know, 5-6 years ago, that's what was Common Core when they started math and English. So I think the biggest thing that we need is transparency, accountability, and accessibility of our local governments. Then we can choose how we want our money spent. But so often there's larger fish to fry way at the federal level. And I'd like to see at the state level us have some ways of having the taxpayers give a voice. And that would mean, like, even the Wisconsin Technical Schools, I mean, we pay taxes to them. Do we have a school board for them? No. We should. The vouchers, I'm for school choice, but I'm also not for just handing money to a school with no accountability. So, I mean, we do need some form of whatever money goes out of taxes to fund schools needs to have a school board attached to it, that we can vote them in or out when they're spending our money recklessly. So I guess I'm a very big advocate for school choice, but I would say also we need to take a serious look at how all this money that's coming down from the federal government, Race to the Top, is kind of like, it sounds like it's competitive, right? But really, it isn't. I mean, the ultimate thing that we really need is competition. Competition is good. And if we compete, schools will do a better job. Like the Marshfield school system does a good job, but you know, now you have a school that's a voucher school. Columbus has a little higher ACT scores. Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. It's probably not a fair comparison because they don't deal with, like my area, you know, special education. So what I guess I'm trying to say is, all things being equal, we all want the best education for our children. But how much of it do we want in other people's decision? I mean, how many people way out of our reach do we want choosing how much we're spending on our schools? So I think if the funding, the biggest problem is probably getting all these tied to strings tied to the federal government. And then we could fund our schools more efficiently and be competitive. So I guess my only complaint with the current school choice is that there's that shelf, like 500, you know, you can't go over that. I think we should expand it to all the families, all the children that want to participate. And I think with that competition, we'll bring costs down and the quality up. Thank you.
Well, it historically has, and if it mirrors the free economy, the real economy, then I think the reason that's so important to me is because it restores the dignity of teachers that are excellent. It allows them to find a place where their excellence is appreciated. It restores the dignity of parents because they now have the ability to choose. It restores the dignity of the child, whether they're low performers or high performers, because they have something that's individualized to them. So should tax money fund schools? I guess that's your question. If it mirrors the real economy, I'm fine with that. The government historically hasn't done a good job of mirroring the real economy.
So I'm a little bit confused by the question, and then I was confused by the answer, only because I thought your question was, should the government run schools? I think they've done a really terrible job doing it, and should they continue to do it? They are doing it, and again, as I said, without a shift in the way that we as citizens deal with that, they're going to continue to run it, and we're going to continue to get the educational system that we have, which really fails a lot of kids. I know, which is, this is going to be really controversial, but I know the Marshfield School District is touted as being a really good school district, and yet you do not know how many people I see who cannot even read. Who cannot even read? How do you graduate someone who cannot read? Seriously? It's shocking and appalling and disgusting to me. My parents absolutely believed that education was valuable, highly valuable and important. My sisters and I all have higher degree educations for a reason, because education is absolutely vital, absolutely important. And what it creates, a little off topic, what it creates is that workforce that I think Mr. Culp was talking about before, where you don't have to compete with government and sitting down and collecting a paycheck from the government, because truthfully it's easier and you get paid just as much to collect it from the government as you do to go out and actually work hard for it. We need to create good skilled workers. Our educational system needs to create good skilled workers, and they're not doing that. They're not doing that effectively right now, and that needs to change. And that's something that I would change in Madison that absolutely needs to change.
Okay, your question was, should government run the schools, correct? Yeah, should the government run public schools? The government has to be involved in the school system because the schools is funded by the government. But the government shouldn't be telling the teachers what they're teaching. It should be the school board that is taking care of that. So no, the answer is my answer would be to that the school board should be running the school, not the government.
Should the, I guess the school board in my mind, that is the government. So at every level, there's somebody involved in the public education of our children. So I guess maybe if your question is, should the federal government, that's kind of where I was coming from, just to clarify. I mean, I like local control of schools. I think we all do. We want to have the ability to call up X member of the school board and say, what are you doing with this? Why did all the administration of the school district of Marshall get a raise when there's a $1.4 million deficit to make up? You know, so there's reasons to not have the public education system run by the government. It's usually because they waste money. But what I think we're really talking about is quality of education. That's what I'm concerned about. And I think that ties in with a lot of different things that are, like I said, money strings are attached. Critical thinking skills is what we need to learn in schools. We need to teach children how to think, not what to think. We don't want to teach them to the test. Standardized testing is probably the biggest waste of money that we have in the education system. So if we could get rid of that, yeah, the public system can work well, but there is some things that could be fine-tuned. I'm not going to say, hey, let's not have public, you know, schools being run by the government, because that's probably almost impossible to get out of at this point. I just like to see us roll back this federal control. I mean, that's something maybe we could talk about in another 10, 20 years. I just think that if we can roll back things we don't like Common Core state standards, you know, educate yourself on what is being taught to your children. Just take a look at the textbook. Math. Okay, so, okay, thank you.
Do you know where you're coming from on that?
Yes.
Do you have any questions,
thanks for asking that. What do you do with public-private partnerships? And, you know, if the end justifies the means, then anything is possible. There is a sense in which it would take an entire reformation of the tax code, which I would be all for. In fact, when I was in Washington, D.C., testifying on tax issues for the Roofing Contractors Association, I was graced with Alan West on the other side, asked me a question. He asked me, was unprepared for it, but he said, what do you think about the fair or flat tax? And I said, that's a good question. And Alan said, well, I try to ask fair questions. So in any case, that the issue is really any tax credit or deduction truly is to some extent a public-private partnership, if you will. Can we repeal all of those right off the bat? I don't know. It would be good to have a pure economy that functioned strictly on what you consumed was taxed as opposed to what you earned was taxed. Don't know if we're ever going to get there. I would certainly work toward that end. And as one who actually did a McDevco loan, I'll just tell you right off the bat that we put in a compressed natural gas station, did a McDevco loan. Didn't think about it being subsidized, but it's a 2%, $50,000 issue, and we, you know, did it. I'm really rethinking all of this because I've never really considered the fact of public-private partnership. In any case, that's a long ramble, but certainly worth thinking about the entire tax code and how it comes to play.
I didn't know that one was going to get thrown at us, but I can see where it has its advantages. Just like Bob said, you know, they helped him get this plant going. By getting that plant going, I'll bet Bob put a few more people to work. What is so terrible about that? I don't know. Maybe you're seeing it from a whole different point of view I am, but this is kind of all new to me, and I wasn't prepared for anything like that, but... If it worked for Bob, and Bob, can I just ask Bob, how many employees did you put to work over that?
That specific thing hasn't taken off yet.
Oh, okay.
And, I'll just be honest. But
yeah.
It works for me, but and it would work for others.
Yes. It worked for Bob. Like you said, it worked for Bob, and it probably could work for others. Nasonville Dairy right down the road here, they put on a big expansion, and I'm sure the government had something to do with that because otherwise, why was Mr. Walker there for 45 minutes last year looking the place over? And he's putting a lot of people to work. I don't know. I don't see what you think is bad about that. That's all.
Yeah, an interesting question that I was asked too over in Neillsville a week ago now or something. Time goes so fast. Crony capitalism is not capitalism. That's ridiculous. Is capitalism the way that this country was founded? What even Ronald Reagan came to say, we need capitalism is the way that we're going to get prosperous. Capitalism is the way that we as Americans became successful and can become successful again. And I think cutting out those public-private partnerships is vital, truly, to our success as a nation, as a success as a state, and as our success as a district, the 69th Assembly District.
Well, yeah, we've heard some good terms for it. The one I think we haven't heard yet is actually the one that if you go on my Facebook, nobleforassembly.com, you'll see corporate welfare. You know, a lot of us talk about welfare, and we don't want to have welfare of any kind. We don't want to give money that we take out of our billfolds. I think if we keep more money in our pockets, we'll be more inclined to invest in order to start a business, create jobs. I think it's a question about the role of government. So a good example of public-private partnerships is the WEDC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which took the place of what was formerly the Department of Commerce. So it's an organization that has had a little bit of a rocky start, to say the least. Sometimes when you use that money, you have to make sure that, first of all, is it the right thing to do? But if you do it, I guess at the very minimum, you want to have it, you know where it goes. $8 million was loaned out by the WEDC, and we don't know where it went or how to get it back. We also gave $8 million to, and I worked for the state as a teacher, and so there's the WRS, Wisconsin Retirement System. So a lot of that deals with Wall Street brokers, and they got $8 million from the state, and they didn't even do a good job. So I think part of the problem when we get the government involved is we pay money for people that don't do a good job. I mean, when I say freedom is a noble pursuit, that's actually a formative philosophy and principle by which I live. Getting government out of the way is not just a rhetoric. Freedom is a noble pursuit means free markets. And when we talk about crony capitalism, corporate welfare, public-private partnerships, we're not talking about a true free market system. I don't want to pick winners and losers, so I won't support anything that takes the money out of your pockets and gives it to anything that says, oh, we're going to create jobs. Because we all want to create jobs, don't we? I want to make more money to stay in your pocket so that you can build your business, maybe start a business. I just think that when you look at this is government getting involved in business, and we want to have lower regulation, lower taxes, more jobs. A good way would be to get rid of public-private partnerships or crony capitalism or corporate welfare or whatever you want to call it. Let's just get that money back in our pockets and not give it to the government to try to hand out to somebody and not even know enough to get it back. Thank you.
Well, Larry, can you tell me, did you think the forum tonight was a success? Do you think all the good issues were covered? Do you think people learned something?
Yes, Terry, I do. The candidates expressed themselves very well, and there were some excellent, excellent questions asked by the audience. And the fact that there was a good, solid interchange between the candidates and the audience, I think it served to provide information for everybody here on every single one of the topics that they discussed.